high short kick that is going to come up and bounce at the 20. Rutgers has a chance to recover it, and they do! What a play by the Scarlet Knights!
Get it to Harper with three, with two, with one. Harper for the win! Got it!
10 and 10 at the 21. Wimsett hands it off. It's Manunga getting to the corner left. 20, 15, catching to 10. Manunga down near the goal line. He is in! Touchdown, Rutgers!
Now with six. Baker making his move with five. Step back three for the lead. Oh. Yeah! With 1.1 to go.
Right, a Friday edition of the Scarlet Faithful podcast. It's been a while since we've talked football. Now with Rutgers men's basketball season complete, we have David Anderson back to the podcast to discuss a long-awaited topic that we've kind of teased and we've talked about offline a lot this offseason. Wanted to focus on the Rutgers quarterback situation in context of the new Big Ten, short-term, long-term prognosis, and more. So, David, thanks so much for being back, and hope all is well.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
So let's start with the quarterback situation in the framework of, with the four Pac-12 teams joining the Big Ten now, there are no more divisions. And I think that that changes the way you can look at quarterback situations for all the teams, and Rutgers specifically, in terms of, do you need, how important is it for a team to have an NFL caliber prospect quarterback to be able to make a legitimate run at the Big Ten title and to be an upper tier team in terms of moving forward? Now that it's the 18 team Big Ten, how important do you think that is? And how would you assess Rutgers in that framework?
It's a good question. And I guess we'll find out a lot probably in the next year or two. But my suspicion is that, you know, if the Big Ten didn't have divisions this past year, Iowa would have not been in the top three. I mean, Penn State finished third in the East, and they absolutely destroyed Iowa, even when Iowa still had Cade McNamara, who will be back this year, as I understand. When we're recording this podcast, things obviously can change in the transfer portal by the time some of our listeners are hearing. But from what I can tell, only four of the Big Ten teams, five really, I guess, Rutgers, are returning their starter from a year ago with the presumption that he will be a starter or competing for that job. And so with Drew Aller at Penn State as one of them and Cade McNamara at Iowa as another, you'd have to assume that, you know, Penn State would have the edge in that head-to-head matchup for on that face alone. So that makes me believe that, yeah, even if Ohio State takes a step back, but they've got five what are considered high, like four or five star quarterbacks in their room. Michigan's got a quarterback battle that's not decided, but you'd have to think that between Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, they're going to come out of this with an NFL prospect at quarterback for those three teams. And then looking at the new additions, Oregon has Gabriel, Washington has Rodgers. I mean, just those five alone, I think the top five probably most likely teams in the Big Ten coming up next year are going to have an NFL level quarterback. That's not to say it's impossible. That's not to say that one of them could get hurt and a team could ride their backup to a second place finish and a spot in the Big Ten title game. But the more that this drags on, the more the college football changes, I think, yeah, to finish in one of the top spots in the Big Ten over the course of a season, you're going to need an NFL level quarterback on your roster or an NFL prospect at least.
I agree with you, and I think we've seen, you know, with teams outside of the Big Ten, opponents of Rutgers that have started the season with NFL prospects and then ultimately, you know, don't have that type of season, you know, including Boston College, Phil Yurkovic. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think that there's several facets to this. One is that a good quarterback can often cover up a lot of deficiencies in your team. Like if you look at Pittsburgh, like when we talked about the reason I bring that up is we recently reviewed where Rutgers fit compared to their former Big East competition. And Pittsburgh just dropped off a cliff after Kenny Pickett left. Clearly, they either weren't aware of the problems that they had that he was covering up, or they knew about them and were incapable of filling them. Neither of it is a good solution. So one is you might not know where you are. Second is that it's also possible that your quarterback is raised by the level of the players around him and looks better than he actually is. So obviously a lot of what we're going to talk about over the next few months comes down to good self-scouting. About you got to really be honest with where you are as a program and acknowledge a problem on your way to fixing it. So I think that, yeah, that can happen. The Yurkovic thing is kind of mind-blowing in retrospect after he ended up in Pitt and really couldn't do much, just like he struggled whenever he didn't have Zay Flowers to throw to and force feed the ball. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting question, but then the positive aspect to it is it's also possible that we'll see a guy who's an NFL-level looking prospect. And if you have someone who comes in, plays well, steals his job, well, that's even better. So you're really just trying to give yourself the chance by having a guy with that kind of talent or that perceived level of often physical ability, if you want to talk about a Christian Hackenberg type, drafted, never really played in the NFL, but he had the physical ability, let's say, to put the Penn State in a position to win some games when he was there. So I do think that it's going to be hard to finish in the top five with just ham and egging it for an entire season, to answer your question.
Yeah, I agree. And one Big Ten example is, you know, Michael Penix, when he was at Indiana, they had that, you know, rise up even in the Big Ten East. And then as soon as he left, Indiana, you know, went right back to being really bad and ultimately coach being fired. So, it's amazing how he elevated that program so quickly, and then just as quickly they fell apart. So that is kind of similarly to what you're mentioning with Pickett. So leading us to Rutgers, I think are in agreement that they don't have a pro caliber quarterback today based on entering this offseason. But what are your overall feelings of the room in terms of their ceiling and their floor going into spring camp and the 2024 season?
Well, I mean, looking back at the list of the now 18 Big Ten teams, I would say Rutgers came into last season with a bottom four quarterback room, probably. I mean, as much as I like Simon as a backup, not necessarily, you know, I wasn't like saying for sure he was supposed should be in a starter. We'll see how he does next year. But adding Ethan Kelly-McManus, I mean, I was rereading a USA Today article preseason last year, and they had Ethan as the number eight quarterback, I believe it was, in the Big Ten. Now, I think he just didn't have a season that he would have liked. You and I have talked about how we believe he performed better the year prior, the 2022 season, than 2023. But I think you have to feel like there's at least a floor where if you can just get something out of the quarterback play this upcoming season, that Rutgers can reach the 6-6 level and go to a bowl game. That, I think, is really what we're talking about, more about the floor. I agree with you right now. Ceiling-wise, obviously Gavin has physical tools, but you know what he is in certain ways at the college level. So now we're going to start seeing fans and perhaps us looking at someone like AJ Serace coming in who, okay, we want to see what he can do. What is his ultimate capability going to be? I don't think he's necessarily going to be the answer early in this season, maybe not even late in the 2024 season. But when you look at how Rutgers stacks up moving forward, if they can keep him in the program, then I think you're maintaining that floor that you would expect with at least two guys. Now that you have Ethan and Gavin, if they're both on the roster, and again, there's another transfer portal window coming after spring practice, but if you can have both of them in the fold, you feel like, hey, we can weather the storm of an injury to one of those two players, and at least, even if it's for a couple games, we can stay afloat and not have our season completely collapse, like we saw Rutgers did after McClain Carter went down in the second game of the 2019 season. Basically, all hope was lost, other than a brief glimmer of Art Sitkowski, you know, before he ultimately took a red shirt. So I feel like Rutgers right now, and anything can change in the college football landscape, I feel like their floor is an acceptable level now, and you're probably in a situation where with the stability in the program, you're going to continue that with, you know, adding Serace to the mix in subsequent years as well as possibly Sean Astenfelder, who is committed, but obviously won't sign a letter of intent for at least another 9 months.
Yeah, very good points. And I think in terms of this coming season, I think we're for Rutgers, you know, as long as their play at quarterback improves and there's a level of competency there higher than last season, you know, I hate to use the word average, but if you just have a solid, you know, average capable quarterback, I think Rutgers can take another step forward and be in that middle of the pack, maybe even higher, you know, towards that kind of bottom of the top half to top end of the conference, not those 5-6 elite teams, but maybe, you know, in that 7-9 range, 6-9 range, who knows? Obviously they have a lot of 50-50 games. We've talked about that. But what do you think in terms of the floor is a duo of Wimsett and Kalik Manis based on the rest of the roster? You know, are we in agreement? Because I feel like the floor you would think would be at least 2 wins in the conference, just based on going into next year on past history of both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair number to put it at. When you look at, for example, Michigan State won 2 Big Ten games last season and probably should have beat Rutgers if, you know, they didn't have 3 things go against them. And that team had a situation with Noah Kim, Levitt, and Hauser, all of which left the program. And I don't think that quarterback situation is as good as Ethan and Gavin. So the fact that a Michigan State team like that won 2 Big Ten games under an interim staff would lead me to believe that even with the additional teams in the conference, Rutgers should be able to get to 2 Big Ten wins, barring some other catastrophe with this quarterback situation.
And do you think the ceiling for those two guys is more than, you know, solid average? And I guess if so, you know, is that, because I know a lot of Rutgers fans are talking about, you know, the dream of, you know, challenging I think the argument, which makes sense, is that they have their, in a way, they have their best chance to go to the college football playoff next year, simply because the field is greater now. There are no more divisions. I think a lot of people are optimistic with the schedule. That being said, I don't think they have a good chance to do that. But if the play of quarterback, say Wimsett or Kalik Manis, really take a couple steps forward and they're, you know, top half QB in the league, what could that potentially mean in terms of results for Rutgers? Is that a realistic ceiling, or is it more of just kind of being solid at a little bit above average and, you know, that we're looking at a 7-8 win scenario?
So I think the first question we would have to answer is, how many teams is the Big Ten going to get into a 12-team playoff, right? Because that's what we're looking at, is 12 yeah. teams. So you no longer have the Pac-12. I don't recall if they have rules that, for example, at least one group of 5 team has to get in it. Is there a rule like that?
Yeah, there is. It's all the Power 5, then I think the 2 Group 5, and then it's all large after that.
Okay, so that means that if there's 10, let's just say 10 for the sake of argument, 10 Power 5 teams in there, they're not going to keep a team out of from the ACC or the Big 12. So best case scenario, Big 10 and SEC get 8 bids total in this hypothetical example. So that would mean you probably got to finish in the top 4, maybe the top 3 if the ACC has a better year than the Big 10, right? So let's just say it's a top 4. We can even say top 5 for the sake of argument. Do I think that Rutgers could hypothetically finish in the top 5 of the Big 10? Yes. Do I think it's very likely? No. Do they literally need every single thing to break right for that to happen? Probably pretty close to that. And one of those things would be probably Gavin Wimsett being a more accurate quarterback. Maybe Ethan Kalik Manis. I think Ethan Kalik Manis probably gives you a better chance to finish 7-5. But I think Gavin Wimsett would be your ticket in 2024 to a top 4 finish in the Big Ten. Because if Gavin Wimsett is able to run like he ran last year, if he's able to comprehend more plays in the playbook, be able to put more of that in, and just be more accurate as a thrower, then could this team be better than everybody but Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, or Oregon maybe? I mean, you got to assume between Oregon, Washington, and those three teams, the big three of the East, somebody's going to have a rough season because that's just how life is in football, right? Wheels fall off, guys get hurt, bad luck happens, you play a few games in the torrential downpour. So could Rutgers sneak past, let's say, one, maybe two of those teams and assume no one else in the Big Ten does? It's possible, but unlikely. But there is a reason that you can tell your players in that locker room, guys, if we reach our potential, this could happen. And I think the ticket for the best likely scenario for that would be Gavin Williamson. Again, I don't necessarily think he might be the best, most likely way you get to 7-5. But I think that if you were to tell me Rutgers made the college football playoff, how did this happen? That would probably be one of my first lines of thinking as to how possible.
I agree with you. And I was pretty close. It's pretty much what I said, but it's not the actual definition. It's the five highest ranked conference champions, right? So the Pac-12 is done. So that means there's going to be a G5 conference champion in those top five. So the five highest ranked conference champions, and then seven highest ranked teams remaining for at large. So that is, you know, probably three Big Ten teams, maybe four. I don't know. We'll see. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see moving forward. But and then one metric we can look at down the road is, you know, how many of those teams making the playoffs for the Big Ten, and overall, you know, how many of them have pro caliber prospects, you know, either now or in the future. My other question for Rutgers right now for you is, in terms of the long term, you know, we both and all Rutgers fans hope that Cal McManus and Wimsett, you know, both move forward and develop and create even more competition going into the year. But how do you look at that room long term past this coming year in terms of the group that they have right now?
Well, I think a big wild card in this whole equation is a Johnny Shepherd. We haven't talked about him a lot in the past podcasts, even as a fan base, because he was a true freshman last year, and it's really hard for true freshmen to play. Like I said, Kirk Soraka is not afraid to play a true freshman, as we've seen from him. He generally doesn't. He generally feels a lot more comfortable from his track record playing a redshirt freshman like Tanner Morgan at Minnesota. Didn't play at all as a true freshman. Their situation at quarterback was not great. He still didn't play, but then he basically became the starter for 4 years immediately as a redshirt freshman. So I would expect a big jump from Shepherd between last year to this year in his development. I mean, physically, he's as big as Gavin, more or less. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but he runs well. We saw him in very limited action, one series, I believe, for the whole season against Wagner. Was decisive with deciding to run and ran, kind of like I've been hyping up Cal McManus, and that it's not that he's necessarily a better runner than Gavin. He's not faster. He's not quicker, but he's quicker to decide that he's going to go. And so that's something that you see a lot of times at all levels of football, where just the decisiveness can make a huge difference. I mean, Shepherd, he looked like he was fairly comfortable throwing those routes that Gavin got comfortable with on, you know, a quick first down and 10 hitch, things like that. So really where I'm going with this conversation is, let's say coming out of spring practice, you feel like a Johnny Shepherd is good enough to be one of your top two quarterbacks on your depth chart. Then you might be in a situation where you could see Ethan or Gavin deciding to move on because they see that, you know, maybe I'm in a battle for the number two job, or there's just a lot of competition here. We'll see. But going into the season, with what we've seen so far, I don't know if you want to pencil in a Johnny Shepherd as your number two QB, but we could see enough in the springtime that both the coaching staff and even fans would feel more comfortable with that. And that's not even to mention AJ Cerace, who is a higher ride prospect who most of us have been familiar with for a long time because of his father being a coach at Princeton. So I do think long-term Rutgers is in a position where things look good right now. But then on the flip side, if you still have Gavin and Ethan for one more year in 2025, then you may see some attrition from other guys, because it's going to be really hard to keep three or four scholarship quarterbacks who think they can be a college starter on your roster. So yes, do I think Rutgers is in a good position now? Yes. Could that change significantly after spring practice? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great points. And Johnny Shepherd, at least from the roster last season, I'm sure it's going to change a little bit when spring camp opens pretty soon here. Shepherd is listed at 6'2", 230. Wims is listed at 6'3", 225. So pretty similar in terms of build and frame and all that. But in terms of, I think what's interesting is a point you brought up is not this season, but beyond this season. And obviously transfer portal era, NIL era, it's actually harder to manage your deeper than if you have a future replacement that's only a freshman or whatnot. I think just how programs, especially in the Big Ten, handle their quarterback situation in terms of balancing that with, you know, your today's starter, your future starter, how much in the future can you really plan for because of NIL and portal and NIL and all that. And related to Rutgers, you know, because we haven't even gotten to Ashenfelder, the recruit that signed for the next season. I mean, that's
not signed, committed, but yeah.
Right. Committed, excuse me. Projected, committed in terms of all that. I mean, that is, if Wimsett and Cali Manis did come back, that is certainly a logjam. And I guess in a good way, a good problem to have, but also really difficult to manage.
Yeah, I mean, like we're seeing, I think it's at Ohio State, they've, like I said, they got four or five-star guys who are on their team now. You have to assume that they will have at maximum three heading into the season, maximum. So where do those two other guys go in the summertime? I'm not saying Rutgers. I'm just saying that there's going to be more movement over that time. I mean, you look at even before the transfer portal, when Patrick Mahomes was at Texas Tech, like you saw this huge turnover, whereas coming through that program in a very short period of time, you had Baker Mayfield, Davis Webb, both went to the NFL. But once Mahomes got the starting gig, it was like a mass exodus. Everyone headed out of town. And so sometimes you have the opposite problem where you could have one really good guy, everyone else leaves, and then you're left and you're starting over. Now that's a good problem to have, because with the NIL, players are going to say, oh, well, you know, this guy did particularly well at this particular school. They need a quarterback. I feel confident that I can get a couple, you know, dollars over there, as well as perhaps be the heir apparent. So I guess the way you're going to have to think about it, maybe not this year, but for Rutgers, I doubt there'll be many seasons where you have a scenario where you have two guys with Big Ten starting experience on your team. This, I think, is going to prove to be an aberration. Really, what your goal is going to have to be for a program like Rutgers that doesn't have unlimited funds is you're going to have a guy who you think can be your starter, and you're going to have a guy who you think is your long-term answer that also feels like he has a path forward and isn't stuck in a logjam. I just don't know if they're going to be able to promise more than that, because one of the things that both Shiano and I believe Pikel in basketball – have done a good job is not over-promising guys. Guys aren't necessarily leaving because they were promised something that they're not getting, which is something that you see other schools do. Even as simple as in the offer list for Rutgers, they're not offering 50 quarterbacks. They're right. Offering a couple, and then if a guy wants to come, that's pretty much the end of that for that cycle. So there's, I think that in every step of that process, this is where, as I mentioned on a previous podcast, the way Greg Schiano operates is becoming more effective in the new landscape since he was hired. Maybe not his just overall stubbornness when it comes to interacting with players, but in terms of how he manages a program and how he has, you know, contingency plans, and he's looking forward as well as in the present, and he has the job security to do that, whereas other coaches that may feel like they're on the hot seat, you're going to just be trying to win right now. And I feel like Rutgers can't put themselves in that lame duck situation, or else they won't be able to be thinking about the future and end up in an abyss like we've seen in the past. But I doubt the Rutgers quarterback room will have the upside and the, let's say, options, maybe not depth's the wrong word, but the number of options that they have this year at this moment.
Yeah, it's making me think, you know, you touched on it a little bit, but like NIL and portal, like after spring practice now, it's going to be a whole nother cycle of kind of free agency with quarterbacks specifically, obviously with other positions too. But you could really see, and we saw it a little bit last year. You know, we saw it with Braun leaving Cincinnati to go to Northwestern.
Ben Bryant, yeah.
After spring camp. So I don't think that's necessarily a concern for Rutgers per se this year, but I think it's definitely something we'll see more of across college football after spring practice this year and even more so the year after that. So that's also another whole nother approach, right? It's almost like two phases of your quarterback development as a program. You know, loading up for spring, getting through spring, and then, you know, almost gearing up and being able to absorb any attrition that happens. Like you said, if one guy is clearly the front runner, you know, does that, you know, change the dynamic of the quarterback room, even just for the next season, not even just the future, long-term future. So I think we'll see how the results are, but just from a recruiting ranking standpoint, from just a talent perspective, skill set, what we know of all the quarterbacks, which granted isn't a ton. I feel like this is as deep as the quarterback room's been in a long time. And although it's not ideal, you know, sometimes you say you've two, you know, bottom half Big Ten starters, then you don't really have a starter. But I think that the hope is with both of them that they can take a step forward this spring. And that's the ideal situation, right? If they both can get better, which will almost elevate their progress even more so as the offseason continues. I guess last point on the current situation, you know, how good do you feel about it now in Chiano year 5, Big Ten year 10, of where we've been and where we are right now?
I mean, I would say I probably feel as good at the quarterback spot as any year since 2014.
Yeah.
To answer your question.
I agree.
I mean, they're like, even when Noah Vedral came in, he was a part-time starter on a okay team in Nebraska. It wasn't like a world beating team that he was playing for. So the fact that you have Cali McManus and Gavin, who, you know, sure. Do I think they're some of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten? No. But they did play at the Power 5 level. Looking at some of the other teams, like Maryland, they've got MJ Morris, I believe it is, coming in from NC State. I mean, he threw for 719 yards last year. Do I think he's pretty good? Yeah, but does he have a track record? No. Same thing with someone like Minnesota. They're bringing Brosmer from New Hampshire to replace Cali McManus. I mean, the guy threw 29 touchdowns and 6 picks for New Hampshire. That's a big jump. So it's entirely possible. Like, we've seen guys come from lower levels and translate, or even just Brock Purdy in the NFL. Like, he was a 7th-round prospect because people said, oh, he doesn't have the arm to play this level, whatever. And then he's led his team to the Super Bowl, inches away from a Super Bowl championship. So, I mean, there are these other situations that we're talking about that – I mean, this might be a controversial take, but would I rather have Hudson Card than Gavin and Ethan? Probably. But you saw what happened was when he went down last year, they couldn't do anything. So is it better to maybe hedge against the possibility of injury, or even not just like being out of the game, but being banged up? Yeah, I mean, that probably puts Rutgers in a better position than Purdue at the quarterback spot overall. Heading into this upcoming season. So I can confidently say that I feel better about Rutgers quarterbacks at any time since 2014, which was their first year in the conference.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because it's like Rutgers does have benefited depth by having two Big Ten starters, but if they had, you know, it's going to be hard to replicate that based on NIL situation at most schools. You know, it's really going to be those blue bloods and those elite teams that have, say, their top 3 quarterbacks are all at a really high level that they're not interchangeable per se, but they have an elite depth at the position, where for a Rutgers to even have just two guys that have started in the past is big and a step forward. But of course, there's going to come with some limitations there, both in terms of just the NIL situation and in terms of where the program currently is at. I think kind of not closing, but getting towards the back end of our conversation, how do you foresee Big Ten teams building the quarterback position moving forward, specifically now with the Big Ten expanding, with NIL in the portal? And how do you think, you know, Rutgers right now, Chiano, as it, you know, continues to believe, and rightfully so, I think, that Rutgers is a developmental program. They continue to pluck top quarterback out of the high school ranks. And then obviously we've seen him when he needs to go into the portal and supplement the position. Do you think it's going to be more mix and match moving forward for Rutgers? Or do you see that potentially changing down the road in respect to how the Big Ten is shaped now?
Well, I was going to ask you, because this is a tough question, this idea. I mean, I think really there's going to be two groups of schools in college football. Those who can go out and get someone in the portal whenever they want, and those who can't. And I would say at the moment, and this is not to say Rutgers can't join that first group, because if portal had been around in like 2008, maybe we wouldn't have seen Tom Savage come to Rutgers. But at that time, Mike Teal's on the way out, so Tom Savage comes in with the opportunity to play right away. If this was 2009, I mean, would Rutgers have been in a position with how well their program was doing to go out and get a transfer portal quarterback like Russell Wilson, for example, for in that moment, right? Who they ended up facing, who they had faced in the bowl game. He transferred to Wisconsin. We saw how that went very well for him. So, I mean, I think that those teams like the Penn States of the world, the Michigans, they have the resources that they should rarely, if ever, be caught with their pants down where they don't have somebody. And I assume they're going to be able to pay their backup more than a lot of other teams pay their starters. I mean, I almost equate this to like the Yankees 20 years ago, where, you know, I'm sure their backup catcher was making more money than the starter for the Kansas City Royals or the Oakland A's, or, you know, stuff like that, where they have the resource to just pay someone more money that they're not going to be that worried about it. But even those teams are going to be just probably trying to stay, I would think, three deep. They're going to need a long-term guy who they're developing, because it's much better to develop a guy from within, know he's good, and save that money for someone else, almost the equivalent of, you know, an NFL team having a quarterback on a rookie deal. Is like, if we know that AJ Serace is really, really good and nobody else knows that, then even if we feel like we need to kick him a little extra NIL money heading into 2025, but no one else has seen him, like, that's a good economical investment for us to develop a guy from the high school ranks. And so there's also a level of loyalty. Like, do I want to uproot myself for a few extra dollars? Probably not in those circumstances. So a team like Rutgers is going to not fall into that top group where they just get a hired gun every year. They're going to fall into the second group where they're really going to have to try to develop diamonds in the rough even more than ever at the quarterback position, but then also be willing to look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, we need to bring in reinforcements, or at least a reinforcement, even if it's for 1 year, to get us through, you know, that bridge. Because I do think what's going to happen, and a lot of teams, like I was saying, where Rutgers will finish in the Big Ten, there's 18 teams. You got to assume that 2, 3, maybe 4 teams that finish in the bottom, it's going to be because they get really, really bad quarterback play, because either they didn't come into the season, the carousel kind of stopped, or the musical chairs stopped without them having one that particular year, or maybe you have one guy, everyone else leaves town, and then he gets hurt. But you're going to have to assume that the teams that finish at the bottom of the conference, that's going to be why, unless something else went horribly wrong. And I think Rutgers is in a position now where their program is built up around them that they should be ahead of the teams that everything falls apart on. And so for them to not be one of those teams that everything falls apart on, they're going to need at least 3 scholarship quarterbacks that they feel confident could go into a game over the course of a season. As much as the most impressive thing is that Gavin played all 13 games. He started all 13 games and took basically every snap. That's probably, other than, you know, getting hurt against Wisconsin, like, that's almost impossible nowadays. So they're going to have to hedge against it. I mean, really the question that I wanted to ask you was maybe tied to Rutgers, but other schools in general, is are schools going to have a one, like, blueprint for how they handle the quarterback position, or are they going to all handle it year by year? Or is it going to be just do it what you got? Like, what are your thoughts on that? And is Rutgers kind of in the same boat as other teams, or are they a more unique situation?
Yeah, you got me thinking as you were talking. You know, it really is, in reference to Shiano's thoughts on the program being a developmental program, it is more sustainable in football, right, versus, let's say, college basketball right now. And in that quarterback room specifically, like you said, there's hidden gems you may have. You may have a three-star quarterback that's a true freshman that, you know, sits out, and you're developing him and you're seeing the future with him. But it's not like he's as much of a flight risk because he doesn't have any college tape. And it's not, you know, like where a freshman comes out, you know, in basketball and maybe plays a limited role, but does enough to increase their value on the open market, where it's harder to do that in football when you don't see any game action. So I think, yeah, it's going to be really interesting how teams handle it. I think the way Rutgers is handling it is I think how Shiano is going to want to handle it, but I think how it could change is based on how players react to spring camp and how the results of that work, right? So if you do have a true battle, I think across college football, it'll be interesting to track this year. Like, of all the true battles in spring camp, how many of the losing quarterbacks in those battles stay versus then enter the portal and try somewhere else? So I think the market as a whole will dictate part of that. But then also with Rutgers, I think ultimately, we know Shiano wants to get guys out of high school that he can develop long term. It's just going to be a matter, I think, when that development isn't maybe where they need it to be, then they supplant it. You know, they're kind of, their backup plan is pull someone from the portal that can either compete against that person or end up, you kind of saving the day in terms of being that starter if the person in that class didn't work out. Overall, I think you're right. I mean, I think the powerhouses are going to, you know, have their pick of free agency year after year. But it's going to be interesting because that's not always going to work either. You know, in terms of, like, Ohio State's really interesting right now. You know, how will Kyle McCord be better at Syracuse than he was at Ohio State? Well, who they replace him with? You know, Howard, is he going to be better at Ohio State? He's still a step up for him as well. So, you know, in a way, the big schools have more resources and have an advantage to be able to go on the portal and get whoever they want. But I wonder if that's necessarily a better situation for them versus having a five-star guy that they develop and is their starter for 3 years. It's going to be very interesting to see. And I think it's going to continue to evolve. I don't know if I fully answered your question, but please pick it up where I missed.
Yeah. I mean, I guess then the logical follow-up question would be, can teams, what we saw from Northwestern last year, where they got Ben Bryant in the summertime, missed spring practice entirely, then laid an egg in week one against Rutgers, but then the team started to play better. Is Rutgers in a position now where they would be able to sit around, let's say in a future year, I'm not saying this year, but in a future year, poach somebody in July, and that guy would be able to start games in the fall? Is Rutgers in that position, or are any teams really in that position, or is that Northwestern a very, very unique case about what they did last year?
Yeah, well, yeah, and I realized I said Braun, not Bryant before. So I think Northwestern is such that it was, you know, a coaching change, so that's part of it. But I also think injuries are a factor too. So, you know, it's more interesting now too, because if a Power 5, Power 4, whatever team has their, you know, perceived starter, say, have a serious injury in spring practice, then all of a sudden they're on the market, you know, in the portal right away. So I think for, like, a Rutgers, that can happen also. Again, your ceiling's probably limited on who you potentially could bring in, but I think it's a better situation than the past, where if you're Rutgers and there's no portal, there's no NIL, and your starter goes down, you know, let's just say worst case scenario back in 2014, you know, Gary Nova goes down in July, right? You're pretty much stuck with what you're stuck with, where nowadays you do have that opportunity to go find somebody, even if it's not necessarily a high end, you know, experienced guy or talent guy, you could still upgrade your situation later in the offseason than you ever could before.
Right. And that's a good point. I mean, I think that you're probably hitting the nail on the head, which is most likely it's going to be used as kind of like NFL, like preseason is, where a lot of times you'll see teams bring in a guy, not necessarily a quarterback, but their, you know, left tackle gets hurt, and then midway through the preseason they got to sign somebody, and that guy's starting week one or two. That's probably going to be more common at the college level, just because quarterback play is so important that having a guy who's good is more important than him knowing your playbook or having been in the program for a few years. Sad as it is to say, I'm old school when it comes to all the sports, baseball, basketball, football. I mean, maybe in hockey, I'm a little bit more open-minded that there's not fighting in the sport, but for the most part, I mean, I guess it's just too bad that this is the way it is. But I mean, you saw Northwestern when they had Ben Bryant versus having Helinski or Sullivan, who had been in the program before with the same offensive coordinator. And I mean, even Sullivan's numbers weren't that bad. Helinski, sadly, we saw him beat Rutgers. And yet their team was nothing without Bryant at the helm, really, at the quarterback spot. I think they won one game. I think they played an independent game, a non-conference, like week 7 or week 8, and they barely won against like a group of 5 team without Bryant. So, I mean, I think that's a really interesting scenario. I doubt Shiano will be ever in a spot where he had to do that. But yeah, I mean, if I look at that 2014 season, Chris Laviano, they went 4-8 the year after with less talent around him. How would he have done with even less experience if he was forced into playing in 2014? I mean, they don't beat Michigan for sure. They maybe still beat Indiana, maybe, just because Leonta Carew was that good. And then, like, I'm not sure. If you look back at that season, what it would have been if you had to play Chris Laviano the whole year, I don't know. So, I mean, I do agree with you. I think Shiano is well positioned in this regard, but quarterback play is more important than ever. And I think I'm curious if I could really have a one-on-one question with him off the record, what he would have learned about the quarterback spot over the last couple of years. Like, what would he really say he's learned about the evolution of the position and its importance, you know, in his second stint in Piscataway?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. Hypothetical. I agree in terms of, you know, I think quarterback is such that, you know, even though it's the most important position, it is almost more interchangeable in the fact that, you know, you could bring in someone later and they could adjust more so than, say, even, you know, you brought in a starting left tackle and all of a sudden threw him in the mix there. I think that's so it's the market and how things dictate with the portal and, you know, deadlines and spring practice, because also it's interesting too, right? Because spring practices are staggered. Not everybody has it at the same time. So how many teams will position it closer to the portal deadline opening in the spring to be better set up for, hey, if we do need to go in the portal, we can right away versus, you know, maybe a program that has a later spring practice. So there's just so many more things to think about. In terms of what Shiano maybe has learned from the quarterback position, I would say based on how Rutgers has been, maybe he wants to run the ball more than ever. I don't know. That would be my guess and what he would say. But obviously, ball control is important. It's actually fascinating if you think about it, because it's so easy to forget that back in those Teal days, I mean, Rutgers was the first offense with a 3,000-yard passer, a 2,000-yard rusher, 2,000-yard receivers. And, I mean, the offense was wide open back then, and it is just so much different now. Closing thought.
I mean, two things. First, to wrap your point about the spring practice, if I recall last year, Rutgers' spring practice ended with very little time between then and when the portal closed. So,
yeah,
it really made it tough that guys had to make a decision right away. So that's one interesting aspect to it. But then you ask your question of, is it better to have spring practice earlier so we know if we have to go get somebody, or is it better to have it later so that we might have slightly less attrition at the end and that maybe our guys have more time to adjust to the playbook, especially a quarterback? Like, that's a really interesting question as to how, what would be make sense. I think that that would be a good example of where it's probably better if other teams are zigging for you to zag. Like, that's probably the better approach for a school like Rutgers, where, you know, you're not having an unlimited budget to then, let's say we had practice and spring practice already ended, that, all right, now if you're Penn State, you're like, all right, now we got a whole month before some teams are done to find our next quarterback in the future. Right. Not obviously this year because they have Aller, but in general. Whereas for Rutgers, I mean, I don't think they're going to be buyers on the market in August for a quarterback. Whereas if you're super desperate and you're the Florida Gators and you can just hand a $10 million out to somebody, like, hey, maybe that would be your approach. So, I mean, I'm curious to see how that happens. I mean, based to your other question about the Rutgers offense being wide open, I mean, that's the most interesting thing to me is, yeah, they were a powerhouse run team in 2006 under five NFL linemen, well, four and a half, let's say. Fladell, he didn't really play, but Stevenson was drafted, Stapleton and the other two played. But to get to that point, I mean, Ryan Hart was chucking it. He was leading the Big East in interceptions for a few years. And I was even looking back at that. Rutgers threw a lot of interceptions even in the Ray Lucas days. I mean, he's a guy who played quarterback in the NFL and was one of the leaders in interceptions because Rutgers was willing to throw the ball around, which I think led to some more lopsided scores, which ultimately may have gotten Doug Graber fired. But, you know, I do think that it is incumbent on the coaching staff to know, do we need to open this up or do we need to just keep our heads down and pound the rock? I think to your point, Shiano's going to want to be even more run heavy to hedge against the possibility of quarterback struggles. But that's really hard to do in the sport today. And as we've talked about in previous podcasts, I'm really concerned that we're going to see a lot of games in the next couple of years, like that game against Maryland, where the other team comes out throwing, you can't throw, and you see yourself down, maybe not 28-3, but it's 21-3 or 21-10 at halftime, and you really are in a position where, hey, if we can't throw the ball, we're totally doomed. I mean, I think for right now, maybe that's a problem. That's a problem. We're dealing with more urgent things at the moment, but that is my fear for if you were to tell me, you know, Greg Schiano got fired in 2028, what is the number one reason you think it was? I would say because they didn't evolve the way with other teams of the passing game. Again, I'm not saying he will, but I'm saying if you put me in a time machine and tell me this is the end result, how do you think this happened? That would be my biggest concern.
Yeah, because you're basically capping your number of ways of winning, right? And as much as like Michigan, you know, was a run heavy team, they have an NFL draft pick as their quarterback that was able to step up and make big plays. So I think, yeah, if you're too focused on that aspect of you, and again, it goes to quarterback play. So maybe it's just a talent thing, right? Once Schiano feels comfortable with who's ever behind center, that he feels they can, you know, open it up more and throw more, maybe they will. But I think that, you know, you want to have as many ways to win games as you can. And yeah, if you're putting yourself in a position, you cannot fall behind or you're pretty much done. That's certainly stifling your potential as a program. So be interesting to see. And then one last point too, going back to the spring camp and portal, you know, another thing that I think it's going to happen eventually, and I'm not saying with Rutgers, just in college football, is if a starter goes down in week one of spring camp, you're going to have them going out and looking for a quarterback in the middle of spring camp. I'm not saying that quarterback is going to show up week two, but I think there'll be programs that won't wait till spring camp's over. You know, they might have a battle with whoever's left, but they're also going to keep one eye open and pursue the portal at the same time. So it's just the scenarios that are going to happen. It's all still evolving in every sport, but just specifically football. I think we've seen basketball kind of explode in terms of how the portal and NIL has changed that right away. Football, obviously, there's a lot more players. There's less per money to go around per se as a sport per player. Not talking about Rutgers specifically, but I think that you're going to see more change down the road. It just hasn't happened as fast in football.
Right. Football is just a bigger roster, a lot more going into it than basketball. I mean, to your point, you really couldn't have someone come in week two unless your academic cycle was such that the person could be enrolled as a student. But right. I'm sure they could come up with, like, he's not practicing, but he's around the team or something. Like, I'm sure there's weird scenarios like that that, you know, pretty
spring
soon.
Break. Have a spring break.
People are going to the quarter system to deal with this probably pretty soon. I mean, that's how crazy this is.
Well, they could take it. They could take an official visit during spring practice, I guess is my point.
Well, would you put it by Alabama to go onto a quarter system so that they could enroll guys in like May so that, you know, or April to more accurately benefit from this? I wouldn't put that past South Carolina, Alabama. They would do it. If they change their academic calendar.
I wouldn't put anything past any of the SC schools for sure.
No, they would do it.
And that's what I think it is. Like, you're going to continue to see things like any way to like beat the system or like have an advantage in the system, you're going to see it changes. So, and I think honestly, the quarterback position will help dictate some of those changes. So that's why I thought it was interesting that we talk about it. I know we went a long time, but we covered a lot. I don't know if we covered everything. Maybe we have a part two down the road. And we'll talk about spring practice as it gets going here towards the end of the month. But thank you so much for being back. Thanks so much for everyone listening to the Scarlet Faithful podcast. And it's good to talk football again. We'll have plenty more coming up this month. And thanks for listening once again.